Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urisin.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is the founder of PPC University, and he's also the founder of Trivium Group. Comes as no surprise that Trivium Group is a PPC advertising agency, straight from the founder. And also, he used to be a competitive MMA fighter. He says he owes his success in business to his fighting career. So, everybody, meet my guest, Mina Elias. Welcome to the show, Mina.
Thank you for having me, Nick. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah. I'm dying to hear all the stories you're going to tell us. So you figured out, when we discussed first, you figured out how to make sense of something very complex, and usually people dislike it, but every Amazon seller needs. What is that?
Numbers.
So, of course, it's all about analytics, right? So I know that from the way you're smiling, you love numbers and analytics, I guess.
Definitely. I'm a huge fan. And really, like, the numbers tell the tale. If you're able to take the numbers from Amazon and put them in the right format, they tell the full story. And so I've been able to come up with a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about now on how to take those numbers from Amazon and paint the picture of what's exactly happening, you know, and not by spending hours, but at a glance.
So tell me, so obviously we can talk all day about numbers, but I'm interested in two things. First, give me the two most important numbers that you monitor, look at, and then for each one, tell me how you use them, so that our listeners can understand. Because watching numbers all day long is not going to do anything. You have to take action. But what are those actions that you take, and when you take them? So give us the whole story.
Okay, so if I were to boil it down to two numbers, the two most important numbers, number one is my cost per session, which is the cost of driving one person into the listing. And the second most important number, the second very important number, is your unit session percentage, which is the number of sessions required to make a conversion. If you take those two numbers together, if you're spending, let's say, $1 to bring one person into the listing, $1 per session, you take the conversion rate, you have a 10% conversion rate, meaning you need 10 sessions to make one conversion. Put them together, that's $10 to make a conversion. That is your true cost of advertising. And the cost of advertising can then be broken up into, how do I improve my conversion rate so that I need less people to make that same conversion, aka less money, less sessions? Or how do I drop my cost of, per session by optimizing my ads or by ranking higher organically, which will increase the number of sessions for the same PPC spend, you know, resulting in a lower cost per session. And so if you told me to boil it down into two numbers, those are the two numbers. And in the dashboard, it's broken down. And it's in a way that you can see the trend week on week. So I can start looking at, okay, PPC spend on went week over week went from $100 to $200. My expectation is if conversion rate remains the same, I'm going to get more sessions. And if I'm going to get more sessions, that means that naturally, as the conversion rate remains the same, I'm going to get more sales. But on the flip side, my profit is going to drop, because as I spend more money on ads, part of those ads are not profitable. Some of them just get clicks and no sales. We're testing, right? We're buying the data. We need to understand it. So the profit goes down. But then once we've acquired that data, we understand now we went from $100 to $200. Our revenue goes up because we've spent more money and we found more keywords and targets to work. We cut down the stuff that doesn't work. Spend goes down. Sales remain relatively the same. Conversion rate goes slightly up because now you're more efficient with the sessions, and then your profit goes up. And so that's how I look at the analytics. Now, if I notice that my PPC spend has remained the same week over week, but my sessions went down, that is an indication that maybe Either it's more competition, and for the same spend, you now need more spend to get the same sessions, or my organic ranking went down. And so in this dashboard that I've built, I can see every single scenario. If my PPC spend goes up or goes down, if my sales go up or go down, if my sessions go up or go down, all of the different permutations and situations, and I can very quickly figure out what happened. And that's given me the ability to say, okay, this is what happened last week. Now what's the action that I need to take? And so that's kind of this is where I think a lot of people fall short, is that they're following the analytics in the PPC campaign manager. They're looking at PPC spend, they're looking at PPC sales, they're looking at ACOS. They skip looking at total sales, even though PPC spend is affecting total sales. They don't look at the sessions, where PPC is directly affecting the sessions. All PPC can do is bring sessions into your listing. It can't make a conversion. They don't look at PPC spend with conversion rate at the same time. They don't look at click-through rate, because as you're launching more campaigns, the first step is people need to actually want to click on you. So as your spend goes up, if you notice that your click-through rate is going down, it means that more people are seeing you, less people want to click on you. And so it's all of these things that if you can see in one dashboard, you can see all of these metrics, you can very quickly identify week over week, what's the change and what's the action that you need to take to fix it or improve it.
Yeah. So there is a lot in what you said. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but it was very subtle. So first of all, in your whole analysis, the assumption is you are spending money on paid sponsorship, you know, Amazon paid advertising.
People to come in. Yeah, people to come in. You're paying people to come into your listing.
Yeah. So not everybody actually does that. I mean, of course, it's advisable to do it, but not everybody does that. However, everything you mentioned still applies, right? Because you need to know how many people are coming in, and you need to know how many people are buying. That's a dynamic that exists whether you're paying or not. People are coming in. And if you've done a good job and you have a mature listing that's well optimized and your listing is ranking pretty well, you're going to be getting these people coming in to your product page, and you want to know how many are converting. However, when you introduce the paid campaign, now you create a whole new set of dynamics where now you have to be looking at three things. How many people coming in and how many people buying for paid?
How much money? Much money you're spending? Yeah.
For paid, organic, and total, right?
And exactly.
At the end of the day, and of course, looking at the total is, at the end of the day, that's what the result is. That's your reality. But if you really want to analyze and go back and try to start tweaking things, then you need to know how much organic and how much paid. And of course, paid also introduces the cost.
And I'm actually against looking at organic. I'm only for looking at paid and looking at total. And I'll tell you why. Because too many people look at the ACOS and they look at the paid, and they try and make sense of the numbers. But this is what I've seen happen so many times. I'll increase my ad spend. My total will go up, including the organic. I'll cut my ad spend. My total will go down, including the organic. Why is organic changing so much if we're just changing the ad spend? Shouldn't organic remain relatively the same and only the ad spend is going to, only the PPC sales are going to change? But because I started noticing, it's literally, if you tracked PPC spend and organic sales, if it goes up, down, they will literally follow exactly each other. And so there's only one conclusion we can draw from this. Attribution is off. Amazon's attribution is off. It doesn't give you all of the credit correctly, or there might be some sort of action that's happening. For example, we're driving traffic. People are seeing it. People are clicking on it, and they're buying from a different account and stuff like that. But I mean, if the story is in the numbers, if I told you this simple thing, I was spending $100. I got $100 in organic sales. I spent $500 in PPC. I got $500 in PPC sales. What are you going to tell me? PPC is affecting the organic. It's that simple. And so whenever people start segmenting it, and this is the thing that kills me with clients, is they come to me and they say, oh, our PPC. I said, listen, you haven't touched anything. You haven't touched anything on the organic side. We are the ones that got you all of these organic sales because we're spending the money. And so once people stop looking at just PPC and start focusing on PPC spend and total sales, because indirectly PPC is causing all of the sales, then you actually are looking at things and you're analyzing them in a comprehensive way. It's like the people that, you know, you have zero Shopify sales, right? Zero on, and then you launch a Facebook campaign, and on Facebook it says you spent $100, you made $300 in sales, but your Shopify got $500 in sales. Where did the $200 in sales come from? This difference. You had nothing on your Shopify. Did the people magically all of a sudden now find you? No, it's your Facebook ads that's causing this. It's just the attribution is off. And so the faster people realize this, the better that they can optimize their ads.
Yeah, so by attribution, you're talking about Amazon system that tells you where your traffic is coming from, right?
Exactly, like that counts the sales. So Amazon, there is a certain... It says, okay, Mina, you spent the $5, you know, you got one sale from PPC, one sale from organic. Even if that second organic sale could have been also from PPC, sometimes it just misses it. We don't know why. But this is a very common trend in all of the marketing platforms. Facebook has attribution issues, Google, Amazon's no different.
Yeah. So what I always tell my clients is for every paid click, expect to get between 3 to 5 organic clicks. What happens to those clicks? That's a whole different question. But the reality is, for every paid click, Amazon system will also deliver organic clicks for you. And of course, the more you spend, the more organic clicks you get. So this is not like a rule you can take to the bank, but the fact is, every paid click will deliver organic clicks. And over time, if you monitor this, and you can actually test it by turning off the PPC campaign for a day and see what happens, which is not advisable because it disrupts things, right? So
I would love everyone to test this. Whatever you have now, look at your PPC spend and look at your sessions, okay? And then double your PPC spend for 3 days. It's okay. It's a small experiment. Double your PPC spend for 3 days. Look at your sessions. What's going to happen to them? Cut back your PPC spend to the normal baseline. Look at your sessions. What's going to happen to them? And you're going to realize that as you change the PPC spend, you directly control the number of people coming into your listing. And that's the lever that you can pull. The nuance to that is, how much are you paying for those people? So that's the second layer. So the first is how many people. So as you spend more money, you bring people into the listing. But the second piece of it is how much you're spending to bring those people. And if you track your cost per session, if you're spending 30 cents to bring a session in, and now you're spending 60 cents, you're being inefficient with your traffic. You're overspending on the traffic. And this also happens when you launch sponsored video, sponsored brand, headline search ads, in placements that you are already ranked high on sponsored product and maybe organic. And it's the same people clicking on your ads, but it's the same person coming in. So you didn't generate any additional sales. And so that's one of the pitfalls, actually, of using sponsored video and headline search ads. If you're not tracking very well in your analytics, you're like, okay, I was spending $100 a day making $500 in sales. I launched video. Now I'm spending $200 a day. How much am I making in total sales? If it's $550, $600, you only made an additional 100, regardless of what the campaign manager says, you only made that extra more money in total sales. And that's what you can track to the video. And that's how you can determine if the video is effective or not. Mm-hmm.
So the next thing is, where do you track your conversion?
So conversion.
You see the total conversion.
Yeah, I don't think anyone should, again, I don't think you should look at PPC metrics at all. You should look at only total metrics. And so conversion rate is found, if you go to reports, business reports, detail page, sales and traffic, either by child or parent. Usually we look at the parent to combine, because traffic will come in from any one of the children, and then it can convert on any of the different children. So we like to blend them all together. So to explain that a little bit better, you could show the vanilla vanilla protein, chocolate protein, strawberry protein. They're going to all bring in different sessions. And then the vanilla people might, some of them might convert on strawberry. The strawberry might convert on chocolate. So I just lump all of their performance together and say, all of them brought me people, and then all of them made me sales. And if I want to see which one of those is performing the best, I can go into the advertised product report, and it will tell me actually which of the variations has the best click-through rate and the best return on ad spend and all of that stuff. And then I can say, okay, maybe the best one that I should be spending all of my money on is the vanilla. Because even if it makes less, maybe like no more chocolate sales and no more strawberry sales, but my ROI is highest for vanilla. And so, but anyways, if you go into reports, business reports, detail page, sales and traffic by parent ASIN, you'll see the unit session percentage. That's your conversion rate. That is the number of sales divided by the number of sessions. So, you know, if you have 10 people buy your product out of 100 people that came into the listing, it's a 10% conversion rate. And so that's where I'm tracking that number.
Yeah. So I have two important things to say about this. And you're right. I mean, this is, I always say, there are two magic bullets for success on Amazon. One of them is click-through rate. How do you increase the click-through rate on specific keywords in the searches? Because the more, the higher the click-through, the more visitors you have coming to your product page. So if you figure out how to increase your click-through, that's obviously going to get you more people to look at the product page. And then the second one, and the most important out of the two, is the conversion rate. So now, what is the difference between conversion rate and unit session percentage?
I think it's the same thing in this sense. To me, unit session percentage is the same as conversion rate. Now, there's a little bit of nuances, right? The conversion rate, it's a definition. So it's maybe it's up to you how you define it, but the unit session percentage is the sales divided by sessions. And for me, that's what I'm tracking. I'm tracking based on my PPC spend, how many sessions are coming in, and then based on those sessions, how many of them are converting, and that's my unit session percentage or my conversion rate.
I am going to tell you something different.
What do you think is the conversion rate?
Well, I did not look at it this way until like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And I actually learned one of my guests. So here is how it goes. You have brought 100 people to the product detail page. Out of those 100 people, 10 people bought. 14 pieces were sold because two of them bought two pieces. USP, unique session percentage, will report 14%, but true conversion rate is 10%.
Because you're taking into account the orders and not the
because
units.
What counts is the orders.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's probably the more accurate way of thinking about it. At the end of the day, it's fine, because as long as you're tracking one, you can stay consistent. But here's also the thing. You could have a high or a certain average order value. So, you know, maybe if you're saying, okay, those two people that bought two units, it's an exception. But what if on average, every 10 people that buy, two of them buy two units? So it's still fair enough to assume that you have a 14% conversion rate if you take enough data and you say, okay, well, over 1,000 people, on average, every 10 people, two people buy two units worth. Something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, but I never thought about it this way. So now I have a whole different take, because now you can design a strategy around the difference between unique unit session percentage and conversion rate, and then say, oh, we have more people buying more than one piece. So therefore, let's do this. Oh, we have, most of the people are buying one piece. So how can we make that more? So that becomes a whole different ball game, because if you are getting a healthy number of unit session percentage results, that is quite likely that you can actually up that a little bit. And when you up that, now you got, you know, everything gets much, much better, because average order value goes up, your top line will lift up. So things like that. So I never thought about it. So this is, it's given me a whole different perspective. So now the real question here is, yes, you go to business reports. I like to look at it at child SKU level, because, you know, it's, I'd like to roll it up. I can roll up anytime I want if I have a child level. So I like to look at it that way, but it's not good to look at it just once, right? Or even though you can select the time frame, you really need to look at it consistently for the same time frame, which means that you have to download, you have to build an Excel file yourself, which keeps the past data so that you can look at it in perspective, right? That's the real value. Would you agree?
I agree. And I have a template. If you want to share it with everyone, it's a Google Sheet. And I fill it in every single day. And the data is presented as week over week over week. And so, you know, you're right. You can start seeing week on week what's changing. Because so many times this is the number one thing people tell me. Mina, I spent $150 on PPC. I have a 65% ACOS. What should I do? I don't know. I mean, they're just giving me one-time numbers. I need to see all of the numbers and how they're trending, and then say, oh, now I understand what happened. Your PPC spend was the same. Your sessions went down. You must have lost your organic ranking. And this could be because initially you were in a honeymoon phase. Amazon was giving you a chance. Your click-through rate was low, and which I'm seeing here, you have a low click-through rate. As a result, they ranked you lower because they're like, okay, you know, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
That's why I like to see it like that.
So totally. Just looking at one set of numbers doesn't mean anything. You need to look at it in perspective over time, try to identify trend. Even then, it's not enough. You know what else you need to be incorporating into that data analysis? What are the events? So if somebody changed the picture, you need to tag that data point. Picture changed. Is it the main picture? Is it all of them? Did you change the bullets? I mean, you need to tag the events according to the data point, whenever that is, so that you can see not only the historical performance, but also the things that happen. And maybe you change the picture, conversion rate went up, and then it came back down to what it was again. Why was that? Triggered the PPC campaign, increased the bid, changed the picture, and increased the it becomes like an ocean. You can drown in it. But that's how you track data. You can't just download a business reports, that's it, I'm done. No, it doesn't work.
This is so important. I'm hoping every single person that listens to this follows this advice. Every single time you make a change, number one, don't make more than one change at a time, because then you can tell what caused what. And number two, it's so simple. Document it. If you have the sheet, the analytic tracking sheet, you can just do right-click, comment on the date, comment. I changed the main image from this one to this one. 2 days later, I increased the bids now for most of my campaigns so I can spend more money to see what happens. Then all of a sudden, you start noticing, after that day, conversion rate started going up. After that day, PPC spend started going up. And you're like, okay, I understand why things are happening. Because you're right. You have the what are the lead things that happened, like the actions, the levers that were pulled, and what's the lag? And even better if you start anticipating actions. So if you say, I'm changing my main image, I anticipate two things will happen. My conversion rate and my click-through rate will change. And you're waiting. And so you're not saying, oh, my ACOS is so bad. Why? Well, maybe if you change your main image and your conversion rate went down, the ACOS became bad because for the same ad spend, you're making less conversion. And so that's kind of the perfect way, I would say, of looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, you are so right. These things are fairly, it can get fairly tedious, but you've got to have this. And frankly, there is no system out there that you can subscribe and it will show you all this. You have to do it yourself. So I do happen to know that there is one system that reports, but I'm not going to tell you. It will be like an advertising. I will tell you in private after.
Okay. It tracks all of the changes you're making on any listing or anything like that.
Conversion rate and all the metrics. So this is great. So let's now talk about different aspects of it. So you've been doing this long enough. You know, you founded the university, but really you understand all the moving parts of building a business. So first and foremost, what would be your advice for the initial challenges when somebody decides, okay, I'm going to start selling on Amazon? I'm talking about wiring your operations. Because what I've seen is people decide, okay, this is how we're going to run things. And then they sign up for their seller account and they usually ask somebody to take care of it. They are not really Amazon people. And so the next thing is the whole operation needs to be rewired because it doesn't fit in. So give us some practical advice on how people can wire their operations to accommodate Amazon.
Okay, so the first thing is your supply chain has to be tight. So make sure that you understand how long it's going to take you to reorder and have expectations on how much you can sell before running out of stock. Running out of stock is the death sentence on Amazon. So make sure that you know exactly how long your inventory will last and you have a very simple system. Please, if you're going to order anything, inspect it, because one negative review on Amazon will kill you. And it's so hard to kind of you recoup from those negative reviews. So that's on that side. Then in terms of the listing building, the first step is you know, very simple. Build the SEO of the listing. You don't even have to have beautiful, written language. Use a tool like Data Dive or something. Look at your competitors' titles and bullet points and take from them, build a better title, build better bullet points. Have that good framework. And then the last piece of the listing is the images and enhanced brand content. Now more than ever, I firmly believe that you need really, really good creative. If you are saying, okay, I want to build my listing with $500, spend $2,000. Spend the extra money. I guarantee you will make that money back like this. If you simply make two more sales a day, you will make your money back like this. And we're talking about like a 3% improvement in conversion rate. Now, imagine a 15% improvement in conversion rate because your product looks really professional and really beautiful. So invest in the creative and keep in mind that every 6 months, you will probably have to improve your creative because everyone around you is constantly improving and innovating. This is now Amazon. There's money in the industry. It's not no longer just whatever. Let's put it on Amazon. Now it's sophisticated sellers that are like us and 10 times better. And aggregators with a lot of money and a lot of creative teams that are coming into the space. So just, you know, focus on the creative and then have a strategy for reviews. If you want my strategy, it's very simple. I go to Instagram and I ask people, we're going to launch our product. I'll Venmo you the money, PayPal you the money, buy it on Amazon, and then I'll follow up with them later for a review. It's against terms of service, but without reviews, you're going to sink. So this is, I think, for me, the biggest thing is make sure that you have a review strategy. If you want to be fully in terms of service compliance, find another way. I don't know. I haven't figured out another way, but just have that thing sorted out. And then once that half is done, the second half is very simple. Have a strategy for PPC. You're going to start by, it's very simple. You just want to launch different things. You have no idea if it's going to work or not, but you're testing. And you test by buying the data. So you're launching these campaigns, you're buying the data, and then Amazon tells you, this works, this doesn't work. If it works, you keep it. If it doesn't work, you eliminate it. And then you take that budget, the eliminated budget, and test new things. And it's just simply you're bringing people into the listing, you're testing new things, and you're setting up yourself for success by having a very good list.
Yeah, so the one thing I'm going to, we are not advocating reimbursing people for their order in order to leave a review. That's totally against Amazon terms of service. So what we, what I have seen is if Amazon, because reviews are a big deal. I'm sure you've heard recently, we're recording this in August 2022. Recently, Amazon sued a bunch of Facebook administrators for user groups, because that's what they were, I mean, they just didn't like how they were handling the review business. So Amazon is extremely sensitive. However, it is perfectly acceptable for you as a seller to ask a buyer, an Amazon shopper, to leave their honest feedback, their honest review. That's okay, but never quid pro quo. That's a no-no, because that means inauthentic. And then what they end up doing is, if they are really unhappy about it, they will remove the reviews from you anyway. So you're going to lose that. In addition, they may remove the reviews, all the reviews left by that particular user, and they ban that user from leaving a review again, ever.
Yeah, and that's usually very typical of people who are in review groups. But that's why, for me, I go out and I find completely unique people that fit the bill. And listen, like Nick said, this is against terms of service. It's up to you. Do it however you want. The answer at the end of the day is you need to get a lot of reviews. You cannot compete if you have 10 reviews or 15 reviews on your listing with people that have 3,000 reviews. Because ask yourself, as a person, as a shopper, when is the last time you bought something with 10 reviews? You always go for the one with 400, 500, 1,000 reviews. So why would it be any different for you? You know, no one pities you. No one cares about you. You're going to be like everyone else. Get the reviews one way or the other. But yeah, that's kind of my take on it.
Until I think about a year ago, you only had reviews. Now you have reviews and ratings. So you rate the product. I guess Amazon figured out, first of all, reviews need to translate into a number. So they were somewhat related, but now you can rate a product by simply clicking the number. But if you want, you don't leave a review. So you have two different things. So you want your rating to be high and your reviews to be also high. So you've got two things to deal with here. Very important. Orders come from reviews. Reviews come from orders. That's the chicken and egg you have to deal with at the beginning, right? So, but once you get going, you get going.
Exactly. And you know, that's why I wanted to share my honest way of doing it, because it's always been a black box, right? And I'm just giving, you know, kind of my honest feedback on it. I don't know why Amazon expects people to review the product. No one cares. No one wants to. Why would I ever spend my time reviewing a product unless I had a negative experience and I'm very mad and upset, you know? So I don't get it.
Well, you know what it is. They are relying on the culture that people want to participate. So everybody want, look, we're doing a podcast, right? I don't know you. You don't know me until a couple of days ago. And the reason why we came together is because you want to talk about stuff that you like talking about. So people like to talk about it. And there is this culture of sharing things on social media. And frankly, Amazon always encourages by sending out links themselves. So like, for example, questions. And those questions and answers, I get often emails from Amazon saying that you bought this item and can you answer this question? And you can, of course, once you answer one question and they bring up another product, there is no shortage. So in the end, I find myself like putting 5-6 different answers to different questions. Of course, that all goes to the product page and people look at it. So my next favorite question is, tell us about your approach on building a team to be successful on Amazon. Define the roles and responsibilities a company who's looking to do this. I'm sure there are sellers out there, they're struggling, they're doing everything themselves, or they delegated the work, but there is some other work showing up and that doesn't get taken care of. So what does it take to grow an Amazon account as a team? And what does that team look like?
Okay, so I'm going to break it out into roles. And right, and I just want everyone to know, if you're thinking like, I'm not ordering that often or whatever, and I don't need that full, you can have one person have three roles, right? Because that's how usually it is in a startup. For my company, I am the CFO and the CEO and the CMO. So it kind of, that's how it works. So let's talk about it. The first thing is supply chain. You need someone who's watching inventory, looking at your sales, how they've been going, looking at projections of the sales, looking at your competitors, looking at the history of the industry to anticipate any changes in sales and inventory. And then once the inventory is at this level where a reorder needs to be taken care of, they need to create the PO, send to the manufacturer, follow up with the manufacturer, schedule the inspection, schedule the freight forwarder, all of that. So all of these things, one person is going to take care of it up until the inventory arrives to Amazon. So that's kind of one role. The second role is someone who is going to manage the account health, and someone who's going to make sure that if you need to create listings or separate listings or any issues like this, you know, come up. It's just someone who can always fix things, create cases. If you use a company like Getida, G-E-T-I-D-A, they get you reimbursements. Someone to stay on top of that. Make sure every time Getida asks you, send me a measurement of your product, send me this shipment, prove that there was like 2,000 units, you know? Someone to stay on top of that kind of stuff. Then from there, you need someone who's advertising. A PPC specialist, someone who's going to run the ads, make sure all the ads are running effectively, testing different keywords all of the time. If you're going through a scaling cycle, launch campaigns, scale, track the analytics. If you're going through a cutting cycle, you know, also lower the bids, optimize, get you more profit. Then from there, you need a listing optimizer. This is like the mirror, call it like the husband and wife team of PPC and listing. The listing optimization person is constantly trying to improve your image and your packaging and your title and your bullet points and testing different coupons and adding virtual bundles and all of the components of the listing to improve click-through rate and conversion rate, just constantly tweaking, documenting, and testing. And you can use a tool like Pickful, for example, where you can get the feedback in 30 minutes from 50 people. You can say, here is my image. Here's a new image that I'm proposing. Which one is better? Here's my new image versus my competitors. Which one is better? And just constantly trying to find that 1% increase in your conversion rate. And then finally, I think you're left with the finances and someone who is going to basically be a bookkeeper and build your profit and loss. It's going to pull the date range reports, document the number of orders, sales, reimbursements, refunds, all of these different, ad spend, and then come up with the final, gross profit, and then your operating expenses, and then your net profit. And that will give you a lot of information on if your business is profitable or not. Because for me, the first like year and a half or so, I had no profit and loss statements. I had no idea if my business was profitable, not profitable, whatever. It was very loose. And now I know exactly my numbers. I know how much I'm making. Everything is very, very tight on the financial side. So I would say that's kind of the team that you need. Remember, when you're starting off and you're not ordering that often, you can have one guy be the like account health and the listing optimization and the inventory and supply chain, and then someone in PPC and then someone for the finance. And you can have a team of three and then you can build and grow from there. And then you're left with the final role, obviously, which is the new product development. And that I believe should be you. You should be the one that if you're going to do one thing, it's manage the team and then find new opportunities for products and build those new products.
Yeah. Because that's the vision, that's the brand that you envision yourself to build and things like that. So this is great. So You talk very fast, but you give like a machine gun, very lethal pieces of information that people can use. So this is great. So tell us a little bit about yourself. So let's go back to the roots. Where did you grow up? And share with us some of your life experiences growing up.
Yeah, I was born in Egypt and I grew up in Dubai. And, you know, it was a pretty good life. Actually, it was a great life up until I was like 10 or so years old. And at that point, I was living in Dubai. My, you know, my dad lost his job. And then it got a little bit rough for us. You know, we didn't have as much money. My parents made a lot of sacrifices to kind of keep us there. So they really, you know, they were very strong and wanted us to have a good life. But it was a little bit difficult being in such a materialistic place. Kind of not being able to afford anything, because it's not like you grew up in America and most of the people around you, like they don't care that much about money. It was in Dubai where everyone cares about money. Everyone talks about your dad drives this car, your mom has this purse, you're going to the movies, you're doing it's always, you know, about money. And so it actually made me kind of hate material things. Not hate it, but be very against having any material things. So if you ever come to my house now, it's very, very, very minimalist. There's, you know, a laptop, a TV, a couch, food, and you know, that's pretty much it. It's very minimalist. I have very nice things, but very little things. I don't have like, you know, a lot of stuff. You know, I kind of learned to be happy with very little, which I think was a huge thing for me is what at a young age, learning to be happy with very little. But I worked very, very hard. My kind of goal was to be the, you know, very, very good grades in high school, get into the best universities, you know, graduate and then get into a very good job. And so I graduated with very high grades from high school, got into all of the universities I wanted. And then I got the lethal blow when I rejected all of the Ivy League schools. I picked a really good school in Canada. And then Canada, 2 months later, said, we are not accepting your student visa. And I was kind of like, I was shocked. I was like, oh, my God, my life is over. And I had to, you know, settle for going to a university in Dubai, just whatever. I was very, very, very sad at the time because I did everything I can. I got very good SAT scores, all of that stuff. And I ended up getting screwed. But then I found a school in Connecticut that was willing to accept me. And I was so desperate. All of the Ivy League schools said, come back after a year, reapply, all of this stuff. But Connecticut was cool. They accepted me. I flew in there and I got stuck in Connecticut for basically 9 years. I graduated my bachelor's of chemical engineering and chemistry, top of my class. Then I went to work for Medtronic, which is the largest surgical devices company in the world. Worked there, you know, was getting my master's. I got my master's for industrial engineering, 4.0 GPA. And I just followed that exact, you know, the exact game plan, right? Of get good grades, get a good job, work up the corporate ladder. But as I moved from one job to the next, I was making more money. I was still living paycheck to paycheck. So my salary from my first job went from $35,000 to $67,000, the most I was making as a salaried employee. And I was still living paycheck to paycheck. And I didn't understand why, but obviously now I know it was because I didn't have financial literacy. I didn't know how to budget effectively and you know, just kind of didn't have good tracking and things like that. But the thing that was happening was, even though I kept working up the corporate ladder, I was not any happier because I was waking up actually at 4:30 in the morning, hitting the gym, commuting 45 minutes to work, working for 9 hours, commuting 45 minutes back, working out and going to sleep. And I felt like I was in prison. You know, it's you're in prison. You wake up, you go have breakfast, and then you go to the yard for a little bit, and then you go to your jail cell and spend the 9 hours there, and then go to the yard for another 45 minutes, and then go to sleep.
How do you break that routine?
I realized that, you know, first of all, I realized that I did not know what I wanted. That's the biggest issue. And I think if you think about it in terms of anything, in terms of business, in terms of fitness, in terms of anything, if you don't know exactly your future state, if I tell you, what's your goal with Argometrics? And you're like, to get better, to make more money. You're never going to get better, make more money. But if I tell you what's your year plan, and you tell me, okay, well, we are here, this is where we want to be in terms of revenue. We need this level of staff. We need this kind of technology. We need this number of leads and this number of marketing and sales channels and whatever. Then you have a plan. And so for me, the first thing was I didn't know what I wanted. I just said, let's just follow the road, right? But then I sat down with myself and I said, okay, what do I want? Well, I want to wake up. I want to be living in a house that looks like this. I want to have a car like this. I want to have this routine. I want to work from home, from my home office. I only want to work 3 or 4 hours a day doing these things. And then I realized, I said, well, what I'm doing right now is never going to be like this. And I actually realized it the most when my boss brought me into the office and said, you have a lot of potential. Do you want to eventually work your way up and take my position and run the company? And I said, yeah, I would love to. And then I was driving home and I said, I know what her life is like. She wakes up every day. She drives to the office. She's there before everyone. She leaves after. I don't want this life. I definitely don't want this life. And so when that happened, it was like, Mina, you don't know what you want. And you're working for... You're walking aimlessly. And so the first solution was, okay, what do I want? Like, let's write it down on paper. And I wrote down exactly what I wanted. And I said, okay, everything that I'm doing right now is not going to get me there. I live in Connecticut. I want California weather. I live in this thing. I want to live in that thing. I'm working from an office. I want to work from home. I want to have financial freedom. I want to have time freedom. I want to have financial freedom. Well, my job is a salary. If I make the company $10 million or I just show up to the office and sit and browse in my email, I'm going to make the same amount of money at the end of the year. So I need something that rewards me based on how hard I work and how much value I add. And once I figured what I wanted and all of the things that I can do to get there, that's when the routine broke. That's when I said, okay, now that I know what I want, what are some things that I can change? And I bet you a lot of people... if you tell me, if you write down what you want, I'll say, okay, you want to work from home, right? So why don't you have a remote job? Well, it's not that easy. No, it is that easy. How hard have you tried to apply for remote jobs? How did you spend maybe an additional 15 hours a week working on becoming an expert at a certain skill that allows you to monetize so that you can then go and work for someone remotely? Oh, no, I didn't. Well, there you go. That's your solution.
You know what I hear, Mina? It's I ask people, what do you want? You know what I hear quite often? Well, I don't know, but I tell you what I don't want. Well, don't tell me what you don't want. Just figure out what you want, because you can't. Yes, it is a method to find the right answer by eliminating the wrong answers, but you can't go through life not wanting things just to figure out what you want. I mean, it doesn't work that way. You have to know.
Exactly.
This is great. So you have, I have no doubt you have inspired a lot of people who were like you, that they're going to listen, like, this guy did this. And unfortunately, we don't have too much time, but your life experience, and then you go into fighting and, there is no, I mean, the way you're talking, it's like, life is precious. Every moment is precious. So don't waste my time, kind of thing. And that kind of attitude will absolutely make you successful. So tell us, how can people reach out and connect with you? Give us your contact information.
Yeah. So if you want to reach out to me through the agency, it's triviumco.com, TRIVIUMCO.com. We actually do, for the people who are like having trouble with PPC, we do free audit and strategy and everything. So if you want to reach me personally, Instagram is @TheMinaElias and LinkedIn and Facebook are Mina Elias. You can ask me any question. I guarantee you I'll answer. I have zero unanswered questions right now on all of my social platforms. So I'm very accessible and I work very hard to get back to everyone. So reach out and if you guys... add me on LinkedIn. I post a lot of valuable PPC content almost 4 times a week. So, I mean, it's more than anyone can take and implement. And I'm just doing my best to add as much value as possible to the industry. We actually collaborated with Helium 10 on a PPC course. And so we built basically the PPC version of Freedom Ticket, 35 plus videos of every single piece of Amazon advertising step by step. So if you're a Helium 10, you know, subscriber, whatever, you can get that too. I'm just trying to empower people and make them realize that PPC isn't as hard as everyone makes it seem.
Yeah, great. That's exactly what you're doing. Thank you, Amina. This was great. I'm sure you'll hear from people, and I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Take it easy.
All right. And that brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.